I am in a different background today. As you see, this is not virtual. I am actually in my car along a side road under a tree. Luckily found a spot that had enough cell service that I could do this exciting conversation today. But I am really doing the hashtag Road Warrior Randy thing today. I just got done with a customer open house literally 15 minutes ago. And so just out living the dream and doing what I love. So today we are going to have a conversation that I've been looking forward to for a long, long time. If you have not heard of Ben Gay the Third, then you should have, and you're going to after today. So hold on for a few minutes, and we are going to have a very, very good 30, 40 minutes with my friend Ben Gay the Third. So do not go away. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Building Wins Live with host, the hybrid road warrior himself, Randy Chafee, and producer-director Wes Wyatt.
Whether we're talking about sales, marketing, tech, or industry news, we want to bring you the best tips, tricks, and info to build wins.
Now, let's get to the show.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon to you.
It's a lovely day in Southwest Michigan. How's it out in? I was going to be real smart here and say the name. Is it Prancerville, California? That's not quite it.
It's Placerville. It's where gold was discovered in 1849, about 6-7 miles from where I'm sitting. So we're one of those old California gold country towns.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, and we're just down the hill from Lake Tahoe. I can see Tahoe by car in 40 minutes. I can be at Tahoe in about an hour. And as to how we're doing, fortunately where we are, but unfortunately for a lot of our friends, you've probably seen on the news these huge wildfires. All we got was smoke, ash, evacuees, and firefighters. So we've been sort of under siege for the better part of a month, but we're fine. And I pray in my morning, evening prayers, Jesus, please do what you think is right. Because I found myself praying, please have the fire go the other way. And then it dawned on me that meant I was praying for other people's houses to be burned down. Jeez. So I had to back off on that. But so far, here in Placerville, we've dodged the bullet.
Well, that's good. That's good. Yeah, those fires are, they're something. I mean, I spent part of my life, or better part of my year in Southern Florida, because I'm a search for endless summer kind of guy. This time of year, I'm in Michigan, but we have some wildfires down there, out in the Everglades, which we're right up against. But it's, I mean, they're like a match stick to what you guys get out there, and I can only. I know what it does to people around there. You know, your traffic's diverted and all those sort of things. But I can only imagine what it's like in California.
It's been rugged. We have friends over in Paradise who it's been 3 years now. Fire went through there and took out 7,000 homes, including a dear friend of ours' main home and a rental home they had and their dental practice. So they really got hit hard, and I looked at that like, well, fortunately, that couldn't happen here. Well, the topography is the same. The altitude's the same. It could happen here, but it just didn't.
Sure. What is the altitude there where you're at, just to get a picture of the area?
I think I should know because I pass a sign with it on it every few minutes. I think we're at about 1,500 feet. We're on Highway 50. Where it starts to climb to go up into the Sierras and look down on Tahoe.
Nice. Yeah, got to be a beautiful area. So as I usually like to start, Ben, and we've got a little chat in already, but so we know where you live. Is that where you're from originally? I know you've been married for quite a few years. If you don't mind, a little background of, besides being the legend of the sales world, who is Ben Gay III?
Well, Ben Gay III was born a Yankee in Massachusetts, but raised a Southerner by the grace of God in Atlanta, Georgia, and moved a few times, lived in Canada briefly and so on, and then landed here in Placerville, which frankly is not the garden spot of the world that I would have picked, but I fell in love with Gigi Ronzoni, whose family's been here 100 years, and all of her dear friends from kindergarten on are here, many of her relatives and so on. And so where I might pick up and go to a less taxed state, mm-hmm. less regulated state with maybe a few less forest fires, it wouldn't be fair to Gigi. So I've settled in. I consider Placerville our home now, know it, almost every business owner in the area, and am quite happy. But if Gigi divorced me tomorrow, I would be in Texas, Florida, or Atlanta.
There you go. Yeah, luckily for me, Dixie, the Dixie chick, she's as much in love with both spots that we call home. So that's a good thing. I originally, when I started down this idea of wanting to be in the South, my idea, Ben, was endless summer. I'm a warm weather guy. I think anything below 74 is stupid cold. So I originally wanted to be in the desert Southwest, and that's what I talked about. But most of my sales world is all either in central or eastern time zone, so there would have been that to deal with a little bit, but that would have been overcomable, if that's a word. But Dix and her, she runs my office for my rep agency, and she's a little better salesperson than she might let on, because she says, well, before we do that, let's just try living near some friends in Southern Florida the first year, right? So, you know, incrementalism, right? At its best, because I'm a big believer in incrementalism. She gets me down there, but I have to play the game a little bit, because I instantly go, okay, I'm in. Like 3 days in, I'm in. But my mind, you know, like any customer, right? I got to play hard to get just a little. It was about 5, 6, 7 weeks into the 6 months that we at least there, and she says, "No." I said to her, "I said, so let's talk about this where we want to do this winter thing." And she says, okay. And I says, I kind of hemmed and hawed. She says, you don't like it here, do you? And I go, no, not really. And she goes, oh, I says, I actually love it. Then I got smacked, and she goes, really? I said, yeah, I'm in. Let's do this. The only thing I made her promise, which she's never lived up to, is that every year or two, we'd take a Airbnb or something in the desert country for like 10 days and just spend a little time, because I do like that area, but that's okay. You know, I have no complaints. So it's
I'll tell you a quick desert story. When we left Massachusetts, we didn't, as a family, I was 6 years old or whatever, we didn't go right to Georgia. We went to California to help open up Apple Valley, California. My father sold Roy Rogers and Dale Evans their ranch, and Mr. and Mrs. Lewis Beltson their ranch. She is better known as Pearl Bailey. So anyway, Apple Valley is in the high desert, Mojave Desert. And we were only there a year, and then we were in Atlanta again. I was 6. I didn't know. It was just another car ride. Years later, I said, you know, why only a year? Dad was doing well. Why? And it turned out mother had nosebleeds. She was from New England, from a wealthy family. And now she's in the high desert country. And we were the first non-Native Americans to live in Apple Valley full time.
Really?
So she had nosebleeds, and Dad loved her, and nosebleeds is no go. So we packed up and moved to Atlanta. The years later, when I said to my mother, you don't have nosebleeds, what was that, high desert? And she said, well, let's just say I don't have to pinch my nose anymore. She created nosebleeds to get the hell out of Apple Valley, California.
Get out of Apple Valley. Hey, you know what? You got to hand it to her. She did what she needed to do to get what she wanted, right?
Absolutely.
That's awesome. Well, good. Well, it's good to get to know you a little bit more. So, you know, you're known as a, I think I get this right, as a true living legend, and that's really the truth. And you've been involved with, learned from, a disciple of, whatever word we want to use, some pretty big names in the world of self improvement and sales, like names like Zig Ziglar, Earl Nightingale, Dr. Napoleon Hill, just to name a few. How did that all start? I mean, that's pretty impressive list of people there, Ben.
Well, I was broke and trying to put my first wife, who's passed away, through nursing school. So I picked up on September 15th, 1965, a Wednesday, I picked up the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, thumbed through it, looked through the want ads for help wanted, and discovered I wasn't really qualified to do anything. I couldn't type. I couldn't do this. I wasn't a psychologist. Right. As you get higher in the alphabet and the help wanted, it gets more and more depressing. And just as I went to throw the newspaper in the trash, I saw business opportunities. So I looked at that and I saw a little bitty ad, only ran one day, one time in the paper. And it said, if you know anything about marketing plans, want to make more money, dial this number. So I went into a phone booth. Your younger people have probably seen them in old movies, an aluminum thing with a phone inside. Went into a phone booth, dialed the number, and I began interviewing the gentleman who answered the phone. Bill Dempsey was his name. He turned out to be my sponsor. And, this is Ben Gay with Brown Gay Food Brokerage. And I'm neglecting to mention the Brown Gay was my father. I was just a $100 a week salesperson. And I got about 5 minutes into my question of him when he said, Mr. Gay, I'm not the man standing in a phone booth answering want ads. Where are you? And I told him, he said, you're about three blocks from my office. Be standing in front of my desk in 10 minutes or don't ever dial this number again. He gave me the address and slammed down the phone. So my running buddy, Jimmy Rucker, the greatest salesperson I ever personally worked with, pulled around. He also worked for my father, and I jumped in the car like Robin in the Batmobile and said, quick, 1447 West Peachtree Street, Suite 300. He said, what's going on? I said, we're going to be rich. I didn't know anything about the business. I just love the guy's attitude. So with maybe 60 seconds to spare, I skidded up in front of the receptionist desk, said, hi, my name's Ben Gay, and I have an appointment. And she says, we got you. Mr. Dempsey will see you in a minute. And from behind me, this voice said, Ben Gay, and he started laughing. Well, I'm used to Ben Gay jokes and so on. So I turned around to see who this clown was, curly-headed guy, a little older than I was. And it was, I said, hi, my name's Ben Gay. What's yours? And he said, Zig Ziglar. And I said, Zig Ziglar, and you're laughing at my name? You got to be kidding me. Well, he'd answered the same ad. Two people, the ad ran one time, one day, two people answered it, Zig and me, and then Jimmy, because he and I were together. So went in, joined the business, $91.41 to get started. A little sample package. And as I left, Bill Dempsey, he said, you're young. Zig was 18 years older than I was. He said, you're young. You're going to need a little help. And so he gave me this record, The Strangest Secret, literally this record, The Strangest Secret by Earl Nightingale, and a copy, this isn't it, of Think and Grow Rich. Mm-hmm. And I have another one here, 75 years old, that he signed. But he said, you're going to need these. Well, you happen to mention three great names. I met Zig at noon and joined the same business he did on the same day. Got Dr. Hill's book and Earl's record. 2 years later, I was president of the company. I had hired Earl to be the voice of Holiday Magic. And Napoleon Hill had been hired by my boss, the owner of the company, to be my personal mentor and friend. So all three that you ask about, kaboom, in one thing. And sitting up at the house one day, and by then I had a rather large house in Marin County, California, overlooking San Francisco Bay. That weekend, Earl and Dr. Hill were both there as house guests. And I told them the story I just told you, because I don't know if they knew it or not. And Earl, or I'm not sure who, one of them said, well, did they help you, the book and the record? And I looked around, looked out over the bay, and Earl started chuckling. I think he knew where I was going. I said, well, I guess so. We've acquired this. I'm president of the company, and both of you work for me. So I guess, yeah, I guess they helped.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Wow. That's just a hell of a story right there. I mean,
well, I was blessed. They were, as I said, Zig was 18 years older. Now he's gone. Earl's gone. Dr. Hill, on the day I met him, I was 25 and he was 84. So there was quite a spread there. So, you know, join something young and then live a long time. And you get to tell stories that are cumulative. You know, not everything happened on one day. But this leads to this and leads to this person and leads to Dr. Norman Vincent Peale and Og Mandino and all these people who became buddies of mine, primarily because I was sitting in the catbird seat. Mm-hmm. If you were in direct selling or commission selling in the mid to late 60s and on, you wanted to be with Holiday Magic. We were the hot thing that was going on. We were bigger than Amway and Shackley combined. Rather quickly we were in 20 countries and so on. And I was president. So if you wanted to be with us, hello, unqualified as I was, you had to deal with me.
Yep. Man.
Somebody asked me one day, you knew Og Mandino? How did you meet him? I said, well, as best I recall, I left my office on the way to the men's room and bumped into him in the hallway. He was trying to get hired in our seminar division. I think that's how it was. And you could see the look on the face. Whoa, we're at a different level here.
Yeah, that's a different level. That's amazing. You know, it's and all those names, it's impressive to me because those are all people that I've listened to CDs or not CDs, but cassettes, which, again, most people listen to.
I started out with records.
Wow.
Records, cassettes.
So slightly before me, but yeah, I did the cassettes. You know, so because you always had to have a pencil around to try to rewind them because they'd always get all messed up when you pull them out. But I've read probably tons of Zig stuff, tons of Og Mandino, of course, Napoleon, Dr. Hill, and those people. You know, they're all idols. You know, they're people. If you're in the sales world, I've been doing this 4+ decades, which excuse me, a little cough. I use 4+ decades because I don't know if it matters, but it sounds less long than 40+ years. So that's what I use. You know, I want a little vanity. You know, I want to sound not quite so old. But so that, you know, you got to the closers, which is it two books that's in the series? And then you've done a lot of things off of that.
Closers Part 7 is being written. But okay. The two books that are the most famous are The Closers Part 1. That's the best-selling, most popular, most powerful book on selling, closing ever written. I may have told you we sold 10.5 million copies of this book when we quit counting 25 years ago. And then people started hounding me, when are you going to do The Closers Part 2 and so on? So I did. This, frankly, is a better book, but it's based on the theory that you read and understood The Closers Part 1 and or other foundational selling stuff. It's what sophisticated people really do with that red raw information in the first book. And as I said, we started adding to the series. Closers Part 3 came out about a year ago. It's a more specialized book, and 4, 5, 6 are being written, and 7 is under option. So there's going to be an Encyclopedia Britannica of the closers before I leave this earth in the business. But the foundation are parts 1 and 2.
Interesting story. I told my my younger son, who's been in the world of sales for 20 years now. He's 40, I think. Yeah, I think he's 40 now. He's been doing this for
father. I think
I try to forget.
Ask your wife, she'll tell you.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I try to forget because it makes me sound really old, as I'll go back to this, but as I mentioned on the pre-show, Ben, I have a great grandson now, right? I'm used to being a grandpa, right, and being called Papa. But when all of a sudden you got this great grandson and people referring to your son as grandpa, that is strange, because you're just looking around going, yeah, and they go, oh, they're not talking to me. They're talking to my little guy. Yeah, you don't, Ricky, you still think of him as your little 1 year old, and now he's 42 years old and he's a grandpa himself. So that was the strangest part of all this. But my 40-year-old son has been selling 20 years, and he's an in-home guy, sells home improvements, metal roofing, those kind of things. Very, very good at what he does, which I'm proud to say. But one company he was at one time, when I was telling him a couple weeks ago that you were going to be on the show, he goes, no way. He says that was required reading at one of the companies he worked for when he was a sales manager, probably 10 years ago. The closers 1 and 2 was required reading by every new hire they had. So your point is that you already know, but your reach is far and wide. So
that story reminds me of Dixie Home Crafters out of Atlanta. That might have been the company. But to show you the value of a well-done book, Hugh Harris, who owned and ran Dixie Home Crafters in its day, picked up his copy of The Closers Part 1 at a garage sale for 50 cents. And we then did, over the years, millions of dollars in business together, required reading for his huge sales force, seminars I did for him, script writing I did for him, and so on. Millions of dollars in business came out of one book that somebody threw in a box at a garage sale.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. So tell me, you know, I know you spent, like, I think you told me 3 years, the last 3 years of Dr. Hill's life, you spent really digging into what his theories and thoughts all about. And I think you might have indicated, I read some, I was reading some background information that he explains how maybe we don't always get it right what he's talking about. Am I close to what I'm saying there?
Yeah, not only they don't get it right, they buy the book and don't read it. One time, the first time I think, he was at our house, he walked in, and on the coffee table, my wife at the time had left a copy of Think and Grow Rich angled so that when you walked into the living room, it was right at your face. It was sort of cheesy, frankly. Mm-hmm. And so I said to Dr. Hill, oh, look, a copy of Think and Grow Rich, you know, like we got together as a family and read it every night. Yep. I'm trying to get out of an awkward moment. I said, Dr. Hill, how does it feel to have written one of the best-selling books of all time? They used to say second only to the Bible. I think the Napoleon Hill Foundation claims the sales are about 110 million. I know from personal experience they couldn't prove that if they had to. It's a good estimate and probably accurate. Might even be conservative. But anyway, he said, best-selling, least read. And then he went on to talk about going into people's offices, seeing it, picking it up, and the spine hadn't been cracked. You know, they like Marcia had put it on our coffee table. They had it out on their desk so he'd see it. 2-3 years ago, a lady who worked for me, Sandra Nomer, brought me for my birthday this copy of Think and Grow Rich. And I opened it up. It says, to Mrs. Grace Dixon, Napoleon Hill. And as I went to open it, I discovered the spine had never been cracked. And therefore, it had only been opened the day he signed it. And therefore, I've never opened it. It's the reason I recently got another copy, just to have one that I wouldn't have, if I wanted to look something up, I wouldn't have to use this one. Right. Now look at this one, Randy. It's a lesson in what's wrong in self-development. Think and Grow Rich, blood red on the front, blood red on the back, bleached out on the spine. Here's what Mrs. Grace Dixon did. you know enough to know where I'm going.
Yep.
She went to something where he was speaking. She listened. She bought the pitch to come, I hate that word, but you know, bought the pitch to come forward and buy a book. She did. stood in line to get it signed. He signed it. Then she took it home and sat it in the bookshelf. And there it sat for 75 years until the daughter-in-law, I'm making up stuff now, but I know how it works. The daughter-in-law, yep, clearing out her belongings when she croaked, found it, and it wound up in a box. And Sandra Nomer bought that for 50 cents. That seems to be the going rate for great books at books at large sales. So I call people like that Grace Dixons. They mean well. Grace probably did. She bought the book. Oh, and the the book I got used, because I didn't want a brand new one. I wanted one that looked sort of like the one Bill Dempsey gave me. This one came from Goodwill in South Carolina. I found it on the internet and ordered it. So I go to open it, and guess what? The spine has never been cracked, and the guy underlined three paragraphs, the last one being on page 45, highlighted, last one being on page 45. So he had one of the great self-development books in the world ever written in any language in his hand, got 45 pages deep into it, and gave it to Goodwill. I mean, it maddens me. You know, he had the secret in his hand. But to his credit, whoever it was, he got 45 pages further than Grace Dixon got.
True. Good point. Good point.
Maybe he got something out of it.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. So the key is, when everybody buys BJ3, shall we say, Bengay the Third's book, The Closers, and the Future Series, they might want to read them, is what you're trying to say.
Yeah, and highlight them. You know, if readers always have highlighter pens near them, and ballpoint pens for underlining. And right now, without getting out of this chair, I could probably reach 50 books that I use. Some of them not every few minutes, but I use them. I find quotes in them or whatever. And they're all, I've given away over 5,000 books. And I can honestly say I read most of them. And scanned them all. Sometimes you start through a book and you figure out this is a waste of time. Right. And that's in the 5,000 also. But I gave away, I almost populated the Placerville County Library with my books. They said this is the largest donation they'd ever had. And I said, well, here's the difference between most of the donated books you get and these. These have been opened. The spine of everyone has been cracked. maybe I didn't memorize each one of them, but you got to read them. You know, Jim Rohn, I think it was, one of my old friends said that you will be 5 years from now, 10 years from now, the composite average of the five people you spend the most time around and the books you read.
Yep. Very good point. Very good point. And, you know, that's good because we're all guilty of that. I feel like I probably am, as I think about myself, I'm probably more in tune to reading some of those kind of things. Because as we'd mentioned, I think we was talking off air that I feel like I'm a student of the game, if you will, of sales, this lovely life that I has been very good to me. But even with that said, I'm going to chastise myself or challenge myself to be better, because it is easy. You know, you start into a book and it's easy to start doing, yeah, and then you put it down, and then you're off to something else, and you don't go back. And if it was valuable enough to buy, to grab, then you probably ought to read this thing, you know?
Yeah, or at least give it a good shot. There's a lot of stuff I get that I just don't. Fortunately, in my position, I don't say that from an ego point, but being rather well-known in publishing, having written hundreds of forewords for books and so on, I get 5 to 10 promotional copies of books every day. And then the author will call when the publisher tells him they sent them to me. What was your favorite part of the book? I said, I'm not going to lie to you. What color was it? I don't know. I read enough of them. I have 5 reading spots here at this desk, then at my real desk in this office, then beside the bed, then in the living room, and then in my briefcase, which means it's the car. It goes to the car. So I have 5 books minimum going at all times. I read a lot. Some people might say, I used to have a joke in my family, if my mom, dad, whatever, gave me a book for Christmas, they'd say, don't give it to him until the gathering is over, because he'll start reading and we'll never talk to him again.
So I'm
a voracious reader. And if I'm caught in a weird situation, I'll read the directions off an Airwick can or a Lysol can before I'll sit there reading nothing. It's right. An obsession. But the obsession has paid well. Quick funny story. Well, it's not funny because of who it is, but I taught my program called People Builders at San Quentin State Prison, later at Lompoc Federal Prison, and at Frontier, a woman's prison. And I would recommend that they read, also teach them, make sure they got taught how to read, because about half the people in prisons are functionally illiterate, which is part of the reason they're in prison.
Right.
But anyway, when I was teaching at San Quentin, the guy, Lieutenant Wooster, whose job was to make my life easy, I could go anywhere I wanted to go in the prison. I never went in death row, but I could have. I just thought it was a lot to go in there and stare at people who were going to be killed. Back then, they were actually killing them. And he came to me one day and he said, I've got an inmate that wants to meet you. I said, well, have him come on down. I'm here every Friday night for 12 hours to Saturday morning. Have him come on down. He said, well, this one can't come. And I said, who is it? And he said, well, he's looking at us right now. The adjustment center was formed, one of the walls around this courtyard we were standing in. Adjustment centers where you go if you don't play well with others, but you haven't qualified to be on death row yet. And he said his cell is on the 5th tier in the adjustment center, and where it is, he looks out when you come in on Friday night. He sees a big crowd greet you, then you disappear for 12 hours, and then he sees a big crowd walk you through the gate, and he's fascinated. He wants to know what you're up to. I said, fine. Who is it? He said, Charlie Manson.
Oh, no kidding.
Wow. Yeah. So I met with Charlie 3 times, about 3 hours each. The reason I know that, they weren't timed. It was you go in after a count and you leave before the next count. So if the count doesn't clear, you're not trapped in somebody's cell for 8 hours. Uh-huh. And so I would always come in after a cleared count, before the next count. And that was 3 hours, 3 different times, 9 hours. But here's what struck me, besides the fact we could do a whole show on just Charlie Manson. I walk into his cell, 2 bunk cell. He used the top bunk as sort of a closet where he put his belongings. Nobody else wanted to sleep with Charlie. I don't know why. So he had a single cell in result. I look up on the top, there's 1 book there. And I said, what an interesting choice of literature. He said, yes, my only book. I said, where's the Bible the Gideons gave you? He said, I gave it away to a new guy. He said, that's my only book. So I picked it up, thumbed through it, and said, interesting choice. How to Win Friends and Influence People.
No kidding.
I called him. And I said, unbelievable. But I instantly started thinking, you know, you can protect your family with a gun or rob a bank.
Yeah.
The gun isn't the problem. Right. And the book isn't the problem. Charlie said, that is my Bible. I could not have built the Manson family without it. So I reread it. I've read it several times, but I reread it starting that night or that morning when I got home Saturday morning. I started reading it again, and I could see the common denominator. You could build IBM by reading How to Win Friends and Influence People, or you could build the Manson family. The techniques are very similar.
I can see that now. That I would have never thought of that, but now that you bring that up, I can see that it would be very much the same technique, right?
Yep.
He's because really come down to whether you build an IBM or in his case the Manson family, it's influencing, as he said, and getting people to follow. him in that case, or follow you as the leader of IBM, or you as the president of your company, right?
Exactly. The techniques are just the same. And he was very persuasive. I don't spend a lot of time on Charlie Manson, but he was very persuasive. And when I was sitting there talking to him, especially the first time, I remember thinking to myself, I am so glad I didn't come to San Francisco from Atlanta for a summer of trying to find myself and bump into him. Because I could have been in Sharon Tate's house. I'd like to think I wouldn't have, but he recruited upper middle class and one rich person into his cult, all who had pretty good educations.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Tex Watson is now a minister. I mean, a real honest to God minister, not a prison guy who got scared and found God the first week he was there. There are a lot of those. But Tex Watson is an honest to God minister, well-educated, good family, and he was right there in the midst of it at Sharon Tate's house.
Wow. So the ability that Charlie had from reading that book was he took people that normally you would not think could be persuaded, and obviously persuaded them to do some pretty bad things. So it just shows how influential you can be, I guess, if you learn to be an influencer. And obviously, secondarily, you probably ought to do it the right way, not the wrong way, or for the right reasons, not the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
We probably shouldn't all aspire to be Charlie, probably, but.
Yeah, he died a year or so ago at 80, and outside the gate, wherever he was, he was in another prison where it wasn't San Quentin, there was a lady, one of the original followers, I think Squeaky Fromm had died by then, but anyway, one of his followers was crouched down as she was 12 hours a day, every day, outside the fence, by the gate. She wanted to marry him. And at age 80, he went wherever you go if you're the Charlie Manson type.
Yeah.
And I guess she went home. You wait 40 or 50 years, you know, and you come out and say, he's dead. What do you do?
Yeah. That's a life-altering day, I guess, right? I mean, what do I do now? Wow, that's interesting. So this is, man, I could sit and talk to you all day, but the one thing I wanted to get to before we kind of end up getting out of here is in your two books, we talked about, I think book one of the closures, or the first two of the series, you're up to seven soon, being a master closer, right? And then I made a note earlier, sales infiltration. You talked more about in book two. Any elaboration you might want to make between being a, I think we all know if we're in sales, what the idea of, what trying to be a master closer is, or at least we think we know what that means to try to be it. Whether we're good at it or not, it's another story. But what's the difference between that and a sales infiltrator?
Well, sales infiltration, by the way, is covered in the closers part two, starting on page 257. It's the best thing I've ever written about selling. In fact, and this is egotistical sounding, I know, I think it's the best thing ever written about selling. One day, I won't bore you with the story, but somebody said something to me that triggered a concept, a memory, and I said, wow, that's it. And I let him out of my office. I said, I'll have to see you tomorrow some other time. Shut the door behind him, locked it, and sat down with a legal pad and wrote sales infiltration. Because what he had said to me, he was an air conditioning repairman, what he had said to me triggered in an instant what Zig really did, what Jimmy Rucker, the greatest salesman I ever personally worked with, really did, what I really did, and it's not the same, and what Og Mandino did, and so on. And it's not what we teach from the front of the room. Not that that's wrong. You got to understand, you know, before you take philosophy in college, you probably ought to go to kindergarten and learn your ABCs and so on. So assuming you've laid out the groundwork and you know the ABCs, you've been through order taker level, salesperson level, closer level, master closer level. There's a level beyond that where when you come to somebody like me and say, or you come to somebody like me and say, I keep running into this price objection or that objection or whatever. I have to really think back to what it was like when I ran into those to give him a logical answer for the moment. Because I'm a sales infiltrator, we don't run into that stuff. We bring it up. Here's what a sales infiltrator does. He first infiltrates the customer, or in your son's case, the family, the situation or whatever, and he becomes part. Most selling is team A, the salesperson, against team B, the customer. And then they go to war and may the best person win. Sales infiltrators don't waste any time on that. First, we get inside your space, your head, your concept or whatever. Then I lay out, and it's right in sales infiltration, I lay out how we're going to play the game up front. I say I operate on a straight basis. That means I'll be straight with you, you be straight with me. Fair enough? They always say fair enough. I said good. So that means when I get through explaining this to you, if I think you're qualified, I won't sell it to you if I don't. If I think you're qualified, I'm going to ask you to buy. At that moment, I don't want to hear that you're going to check with your brother-in-law in Cleveland, who's an accountant. A, you don't have a brother-in-law in Cleveland, and B, if you have a brother-in-law, he's not an accountant. So we're not going to play games that way. I've heard no roughly 16,000 times. I figure I've made 100,000 one-on-one sales presentations in the last 55 years, not counting 15, 20,000 in an arena, but just one-on-one in their office, my office, their home, or whatever. And I have an 86% closing rate. That's astounding. A lot of people don't believe it when they hear it. It also means that I've heard 14,000 no's. So I can take another one. If yep. when we're done, you don't qualify, you don't have the money, you don't have the time, you don't have the whatever, just say no. Let's not do the brother-in-law Cleveland nonsense. And the another one that a lot of my customers do, I'm talking to him, a lot of the thing my customers who say they want to think about it. I'm going to tell you up front, I'm going to answer every question that you have, and most before you ask them about this product or service. Except as a stall, you're not going to have anything to think about. We're going to be down to yes or no. Fair enough? Fair enough. Blah, blah, blah. So when you go through the presentation, that doesn't mean they won't do those things. They'll try them. But it leaves me in a position with a big smile to say, nope. Remember, you promised me you wouldn't do that. If you have a legitimate question about the product or service or concern, ask me. If it's a condition, you don't have the money, tell me. Maybe we can work something out. But I got to work with real information. So I don't hear, I want to think about it, I got to talk to my wife. It's necessary for your son knows. If he's got to talk to his wife, you've already screwed up, because in home improvement, you don't give a one-legged presentation.
Right on.
Ever. Right. Ever.
On. Ever. Exactly. Exactly. You know, it's the first time I ever heard the word one-legged was from my son years ago. I said, what's a one-legged? He goes, when the Mr. and Mrs. is not there, then we don't do the appointment. It's simple as that. Because as you said, you're not going to sell that job.
Nope.
And you know that.
And many times they deliberately plotted not to have one of them there. It wasn't accidental.
Sure.
Dear, go to your girlfriend's house, or sir, go out and have a beer with your friends. So when they ask for the money, we have a legitimate way to say, can't do it now.
Right.
So
right.
I don't give one-legged presentations.
Perfect. Wow. Good stuff. Well, Ben, I know I promised you I'd try not to keep too much of your time. You've been very generous with your time. We do have, my buddy Wes that you met, is going to pop up his favorite hashtag, should ask questions. Last few minutes before we part ways, at least for today, what didn't I ask today that you would have liked to have talked about? What did we miss today? What's Give me the big ending here. What should we have talked about?
Well, I've been selling where it sounds sort of silly, but it's not. At age 10, I went up against every child in Atlanta, Georgia, in a Krispy Kreme donut selling contest. Okay. First prize was a bright red Columbia bicycle.
Nice.
I beat them all and won. So when I say I've been in selling 50 years plus and so on, I'm really starting from a young adult stage. The truth is I've been fascinated by selling and selling since I was 10 and have been doing it well. I've won every contest I've ever been in, much to Zig's chagrin. I beat him in a year-long contest. He was having a celebratory party, having won the contest. He thought I was holding an opportunity meeting. The difference between us after a year was the amount that I sold in that last opportunity meeting. That's what I really beat him by. Wow. Yeah. So I've been at this a while. I've been successful, had some downs along the way, et cetera. I've sold, I guess indirectly, it would be fair to say, billions of dollars in products. The cosmetic company, Holiday Magic Cosmetics, was doing today, in today's money, $3.5 billion when I left, and I was still in my late 20s. And I wrote the scripts that everybody used all the time, or we threw you out of the company. And the same script Zig used, for instance. So when I say I've been at it a while, I mean I've really been at it a while. Mm-hmm. And selling a myriad of products over the years, products and services. So people say to me, what's changed in selling since you got into it? And the answer is nothing. The customer still wants to know what's in it for me. Now, what has changed on the surface of selling are the techniques of gathering people. I can talk to more people today if I choose to through teleseminars and email blasts and so on. I can contact more people today than I have in the last 10 years or 20 years or whatever. Right. And cumulatively, because people will be watching you and me have this conversation years from now, cumulatively, it's even greater than that. So what's changed? Picture yourself as a shepherd with a herd of sheep. And I don't mean sheep in a negative way, just a shepherd with a herd of sheep. What's changed is the sheepdogs have gotten faster. We can gather them up now. As recently as 1965, if I invited you to a meeting in Atlanta and you were a hot prospect, I got in my car, drove to your home, picked you up, took you down to the hotel, and then took you back after the meeting. Today, to somebody in direct sales, multi-level marketing, if you told them that, they go, what? What? Well, we didn't have the internet or cell phones or whatever. So that's a sheepdog. That's change. Learn your new techniques, etc. But when the sheep are gathered up, again, I don't mean that in a negative term, mm-hmm. when the herd is gathered up and you've got them at the barn and it's time to shear them, the sheep are going to want to know, what's in it for me? Why should I be dealing with you? And if you're a sales infiltrator, you've sold them on you first and foremost. I spend most of my time making sure they understand if Ben Gay comes with a product or service, they're in good hands. I'll take mm-hmm. care of them. I'll protect it. I'll personally guarantee it. So it's the numbers that you can reach. I can reach more people today to motivate them to do something than I did in my entire career at Holiday Magic Cosmetics, driving around, picking them up, standing in front of the room, giving an opportunity meeting, and so on. That was very profitable, adjusted for inflation. Rucker and I were making about almost $500,000 a month doing that. If we had had the tools that your viewers and listeners have today, I would be the benevolent dictator of Earth.
I love it. That's good info. As our mutual friend Wes would say, is a big golden nugget. He's writing notes. I can see him. I know he's in the background writing notes right now. That's big right there. And I love that, because what I took from what you said a couple minutes ago is, I sometimes also use the phrase in my mind of, in my case, it's Randy Inc., right? I mean, my rep agency doesn't matter. I said doesn't matter, but the first thing that matters, rather than my product or my manufacturers that I represent, is me first, right? Because I think so many young guys, and it could be young, whether it's just age or young as in the profession of selling, they lead with, well, I got this new fancy widget. Well, and I think what I'm hearing you say, which is what I believe, that customer don't, first place, they might not even need that stupid widget or want the dumb widget, right? Right. So and they're not going to have an interest in that widget if they don't, in your case, believe in Ben Gay III or believe in Randy Chafee, right? If they don't, we just started an hour and a half long waste of everybody's time, probably. So,
yes, absolutely. My father had some stationery printed up for me when I went to work for Macy's in Atlanta. It was called Davison's, but it was Macy's. They called it Davison's so the Southerners wouldn't know the Yankees were in town, or they wouldn't have dealt with them. But he had some stationery printed up for me. It said Ben Gay III, comma, Inc.
Love it.
And he did it, I believe, strictly because one day I was at their house where I was raised, but I wasn't living there anymore, and whining about something that Macy's had done. And he said, "You're not grateful." And I said, "Grateful for what?" You know, and he said, "Ben, they spent millions of dollars building that 5-story department store you work in. They spend millions of dollars generating foot traffic to come in and buy, sales, marketing, advertising, and so on. And then you, without any expenses whatsoever, and then they hire an accounting department for you and an inventory, they hire purchasing agents and so on. And then you, Ben Gay Incorporated, get to sit there and without laying out a dime, take advantage of all of that." So don't be fooled. You're not at Davison's, Macy's. You're Ben Gay Incorporated, who happens to be operating out of a Davison's store, but it's your business.
Right.
And I've carried that attitude with me ever since. I don't care when I was president of Holiday Magic Cosmetics, I was Ben Gay Inc. operating within a cosmetic company.
That's brilliant. Love that.
I carry that with me everywhere. And so you are absolutely right. That is the answer. There used to be an old show on television called Paladin, starring Richard Boone. He was a hired gunfighter on the good guy's side. His business card said Paladin, San Francisco. Have gun, will travel.
Okay.
Ben Gay has talent and will travel.
Yeah, like it. I love that. That's awesome. Awesome. Well, Ben, I truly appreciate you taking darn near an hour with us. It's been insightful. It's been everything I thought it would be, and I appreciate your time, my friend. It's been
my pleasure. Anytime I can be of assistance. If somebody drops dead at the last minute, call me. I'll fill in.
I will do that. I'm going to write that down. Does that mean I should send arsenic to a few people, or should I just...
Well, you could. Ern Westmore, the great Hollywood makeup artist, introduced me in front of 5,000 people in New York, said, "And here he is, Ben Gay III," and dropped dead on stage in front of 5,000 people.
Oh, man.
So I'm used to last-minute fill-ins.
Perfect. I will keep that in mind, and I appreciate that offer, my friend. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Wes, going to pop you back in the green room, and we'll be back to chat just for another couple minutes if you don't mind.
Sure.
All right. Ben, thank you, sir. Folks, there it was. I promised you today was going to be big. I have been blessed, as I've said many a time, so we had some incredible guests, and we got some more incredible guests coming. But I knew I've been familiar with Ben Gay III for a long, long time now, and we've had the pleasure of meeting up social media wise, and I this was way more than I even hoped for. Good stuff. I hope you enjoyed it as well. Reach out to buy his books. I guess what I'm trying to say, if you haven't read them already, good stuff. So that's it for today. you know what we're going to do next Friday? We're going to come back and do this again because we love what we do, don't we? Because we are road warriors and we love selling. We love building relationships and we love doing what we do. So we're going to see you next week with another guy that's involved in the world of sales, a guy that I know personally, have listened to speak numerous times in the past. He is a really good friend. I consider him a good friend, Marvin Montgomery. We are going to be, as he likes to say, Marvinized next week. So don't miss that next week, my good friend Marvin. You're going to enjoy him. Until then, remember this. I say it all the time, but I'm going to say it again. Seize the day, live it, love it, own it, and make the day your best day ever. Until tomorrow. Cheers, my friends. Make it a great one.
Thank you for listening to Building Wins Live.
You can find information on Randy, Wes, our guests, show notes, and anything related to the podcast at buildingwins.live. On behalf of the whole Building Wins team, don't forget, make today your best day ever. Until tomorrow.